What's he doing here? I thought they had standards for the audience.
Is that it? Oh.
Is that like seven?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I call the City of Franklin's Plan Commission to order. Mr. Fuchs, please take the roll.
Commissioner Micklegg?
Here.
Commissioner Ritter?
Here.
Commissioner Haley?
Here.
Mayor Taylor?
Here.
Commissioner Bennett?
Here.
Alderman Solomon?
Here.
Commissioner Fowler?
Here.
Ryan, you're going to be in place of allegiance to the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Somebody told me there's a Packer game on. Item 2, approval of the minutes, regular meeting Thursday, August 9th, 2012.
So moved.
Second. Second. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nice have it. Motion carries. Item 3, public hearings, business items. Item A, Mr. Fuchs, do you have anything for us or no?
No.
Okay. I talked to this gentleman on the phone about the project. Sounded like a very, very good proposal. I'll explain to him some of the problems that we've had in the past with golf shows and parking and law enforcement and all those things. And I don't know, after talking to the gentleman, it seemed to me that this is a very positive thing for Franklin and that... they are well aware of all the things that they need to come into compliance with, so I would recommend approval of this. Is there a motion to approve a resolution imposing conditions and restrictions for the approval of temporary use for Holiday Craft and Gift Expo for property located at 6000 West Ryan Road?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Moved and seconded. Further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Ayes have it. Motion carries. Thank you very much, and look forward to maybe stopping over and seeing what you have.
It's coming together very well. Thank you.
Everybody's
been very cooperative. So.
It's nice. If you see the new parks director that...
Member?
Yeah. No, actually, I was just talking to him on the phone the other day, so it's... we're trying to work together on these types of events.
Excellent.
Okay. Thanks again.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Milwaukee County Sports Complex, historical uses. Item B, Mr. Deedle.
This is being brought forward from the March 22nd meeting. We brought that forward at that time mostly for a status update. A couple years ago, we had experienced increasing amounts of problems with the sports complex uses, more uses in general, but in particular, more uses that weren't sports-related. And compounding the problem is with less and less notice, so that if there were issues or concerns or were not permitted uses, we weren't often given opportunities to either respond at all or respond in a timely fashion. So then a couple years ago, we started meeting with Parks Department staff, including Sue Black. And one of the results, concrete results, that they now regularly notify us as soon as they can, still sometimes a few weeks, but sometimes a few months ahead of time of upcoming events, and that's a definite improvement. But we are also hoping to do a memorandum of understanding at some point. I don't believe that there's been any slippage, if you want to call it that, in regards to Milwaukee County's notices to us. We're still getting fairly good notice of upcoming events. Staff still has concerns. We'd like to bring all the uses into full compliance with the original special use, and that a memorandum of understanding would be a good way to bridge what they do now to the eventual special use amendment. So that's still on the table some point in the future to do. City attorney will be the one involved in that. And I guess the last thing is I don't think there are any new or serious issues. It's still as it has been the last couple of years. Some uses that we do have to bring to the Plan Commission that we're not entirely comfortable with, but could potentially be addressed through that memorandum of understanding and the eventual special use amendment.
Like I said a couple times, I was on the phone. The new parks director, interim parks director, called me regarding the Crystal Ridge matter. He was kind enough to say that he would have come down to the meeting the other night if I thought it necessary. I didn't think it was necessary, especially given the workload that he's just been given. And I've known him for quite a few years. I said, you know, we'll catch you at another time. But he did say to me that that if we wanted to get together, or we had any outstanding issues, that I could call him. And so I think we should take him up on that and try and resolve this once and for all. I see the new parking lot is in place. Whoever had a hand in that, thank you very much, Kevin. That's nice, but you know, there's a Mr. Keegan, I believe, had been in many, many meetings with me and Director Black and others. So he is very knowledgeable of everything that's outstanding. He is an interim director. So I think we should take him up on his offer to come in and try and resolve whatever things we can resolve. So looking to you, Mr. Deal, to remind me that we should try and set up an appointment with him to do that.
Yes, sir.
And I would assume that Paul Buglich is still there?
Correct.
Incorrect.
He?
Yes.
He's taking a job with our corporation council, so it's still with the county. He is not our contract administrator, and we're looking to hire him shortly.
Okay.
So you just a chancellor, so we get.
See? It's too late. Well, that's even more of an incentive to sit down and try and work with Mr. Keegan as quickly as we can on this. Who knows what's next? I know that when I go down to Wong Air Force Base for the camp occasionally, and I know that all of the Kenosha golf courses down there are a bit privatized. So I think you got my point. I don't think anybody wants to go back and revisit every single issue that we've already talked about. Okay. Anything else needed on that? Mr. Kuglich is gone. Or, well, he's a corp counsel. Who is the corp counsel? Kimberly something? Just a matter.
It will come in a second. Walker.
Kimberly Walker. Is there anybody down here that I would know yet?
Mark Brady.
Oh, what's Mark doing?
He's probably number two down there.
Is he labor relations?
Is he the person over there? A lot of things. I do a lot of these guys.
Okay.
But Paul is, will still be continuing to pursue a lot of parts related to insurance.
Okay. I'm guessing that's kind of like a reorganization that took place a few years back where they took all the human resources managers and brought them under the director of human resources. So. Okie dokie. Next item, Mr. Solomon. Alderman Solomon.
Just one point, and all these special exceptions that you want to put under one roof. Usually the police department has input to a lot of these special events, and as long as they get a chance to look at them ahead of time, that would be wonderful. Just be sure that you keep that process involved, that maybe if you're going to have that meeting, you might want Inspector Hahn or somebody there that we've utilized his expertise in the past as far as the traffic scenario. Any problems that may exist. So, just a comment.
It was just I had one of those things where I went back about 10 years, and I just realized that the last time I turned to my right and Alderman Solomon was sitting on a committee with me was when I was the chairman of the Finance Commission. So, The special event ordinance and the planning ordinances, they're not, they're both separate and unique. So the
but sometimes by coincidence overlap.
Okay. The point that Alderman Solomon's bringing up, I think, if in fact we do have duplication in there, because you have the licensing committee and the elected officials that weigh in on the special events, especially the aldermen for the district, that we should, whenever if we can, try and harmonize them so there's no conflict, so that plan commission isn't, in essence, approving something that's contrary to what the...
One thing we have to, and it was, I think, mostly a Nick's urging, where we do have those overlaps for an event that will be covered by that special events permit application the clerk's office has and asked to go to the common council for approval, where they would overlap with an event that we thought maybe we would want to take this to the plan commission as a temporary use. If they can convince me, I say, we're okay because it's going to be covered by the special events common council approval, and the clerk gives us an opportunity to comment as well. So we have tried to avoid as much of that overlap duplication as we're comfortable with. And Nick does a good job of pushing me to remember to do that.
I mean, you know that I'm I was more than a bit upset about the golf show.
Yes.
And there was a situation where it's conceivable we may not have been able to get emergency vehicles in there.
Yep.
Okay, I think we've just about killed that one. Unified Development Ordinance Text Amendment for Revisions to Natural Resource Protection Standards.
If I can, I'll go up by the PowerPoint. I have a PowerPoint that covers...
Let me ask you, did you need a motion on B or anything?
On B, no.
Okay. So, okay, C. I don't recall. Is this the first time that you're bringing this to the attention of the Plan Commission?
Plan Commission, yes.
Okay. So this Plan Commission could take a considerable amount of time to study this. You're not looking for a vote tonight? Or...
No. If you wish to, that's fine. But no, you don't have to. And yeah, we took this. We have. Let's take a couple steps back. It starts with the directions from the Common Council. Particularly in regards to, if you may recall, the Mulligan situation. I like to refer to it as the Mulligan situation. Existing development, there was a UDO text amendment approved by the council to allow the use of best available information in many more instances than previously allowed for expansions of existing development. And the importance of that is best available information. There's a chance we might be missing something. So if there's something within 100 feet of that property, it's the same process that we know of, whether it's mapped or unmapped, but we're aware there's a wetland or a floodplain within 100 feet. Same situation has always been. But if there's nothing that we're aware of, nothing mapped, nothing that we're aware of, and we try to go to site visits, nothing within 100 feet, they can use best available information for their entire property when they do a project for existing development. That was a UDO text amendment approved by the council. A year or two later, passed a motion requesting the same thing for all development and directed that we work with Alderman Wilhelm to come up with that UDO text amendment. This was a couple years ago. Staff, Mark and I and Alderman Wilhelm got together, started working on that UDO text amendment, had a lot of concerns with it, what the ramifications would be for missing things, particularly smaller wetlands, but potentially anything, and how inaccurate our existing information is. So if somebody misjudges the area of impact, they could be intruding into these natural resources. And there's a real-life example that Phil on Loomis Road, Cajun is doing, the same situation happened there. On the plans, they showed the natural resources, best available information, a combination of best available and field verified. Made some mistakes with his filling area and intruded into some of it. So those kinds of situations can happen. Alderman Wilhelm, Mark, and I had those concerns and through some conversations came up with a concept similar to this, utilizing sewer pack information. Alderman Wilhelm, to be brutally honest, has a lot of concerns with this proposal, not the idea, but with the details. So she's made it clear she wants me to mention that whenever I mention this idea. So the PowerPoint is essentially the same as the staff report that I gave you, but it's got some pictures that I hope explain some stuff when I get to it. So I'm going to breeze really quickly through it until I get to those pictures. So I've touched base on why we started doing this. It's also consistent with the direction that we were given by the mayoral ad hoc committee to streamline the development review process. One overlapping issue, partially done, partially further, that we can go further in that direction, is the allowance for the submittal of preliminary plans with their applications for development. When somebody submits an application for a special use or a site plan or a rezoning, they are now allowed to provide preliminary stormwater plan, preliminary lighting plan, preliminary landscaping, preliminary natural resource protection plan. This proposal, I believe, would go further in that direction, further accomplishing the direction that was provided to staff by this mayoral ad hoc committee, meaning that with preliminary information, we can miss things. But with the preliminary information that SewerPAC has, their mapping, that mapping is much better than the preliminary information we currently have of our natural resource standards. So I believe that we'd be missing fewer things. It would be more accurate, so it would be more useful for a developer when he's trying to put his initial set of plans together. And then again, the bottom line is I think this is going to reduce the number of natural resource protection plans that will be required, because that mapping is better than what we have now. We'll be more comfortable making those calls that there is nothing where they propose development, and therefore they don't have to do a natural resource protection plan. They can just utilize that sewer pack mapping. Reviews or streamlines the review process, because that mapping is already available, both electronically and in paper copies, both at sewer pack and in our offices. We would be able to provide that information to them. They can obtain it from sewer pack and provide it in the first set of plans they start putting together. And I believe, this is one of the areas where Alderman Wilhelm may not agree with me, I believe this provides a similar, not the same, but a similar level of protection of natural resources. Sewer PAC's environmental corridors, I'll breeze through this unless somebody wants more information. These are background facts and data about their resources they protect, termed primary environmental corridors, which are the most important. There's a couple examples. Secondary environmental cores, smaller, typically less important, but there are some instances that they could be almost as important as a primary. Some examples. And then the isolated natural resource areas, the smallest of them all, typically the least important, but once in a while, if it's an isolated wetland of high quality, it could be very important in and of itself. Some examples. Individual features, how they came up with those corridors, they identified it then. Individual features, assigned them point values, identified where they overlapped, and if they have a certain number of points in a particular spot, it potentially qualifies for inclusion in an environmental corridor. And these are those features. They assigned different points to these based on how important they thought they were, and if there were enough points, they could be an environmental corridor, and if it's large enough, it's a primary, not quite large enough, it's a secondary, and if it's small, it's an isolated. What we used to have up until just a year or so ago, two ordinances, two standards applied within the city, our UDO and that sewer service area plan prepared by Sewer PAC. That plan required the protection of primary and only primary environmental.
Let me stop you. You're using the word Sewer PAC, and I would guess you would assume that everybody knows what that is.
Yes.
Because we do have audience members here.
Okay.
Southeastern Regional
Planning Southeastern Commission. Wisconsin Regional Planning Commission.
And what is that, and who sits on there?
It is a quasi-governmental agency created by the state. They are assigned a number of tasks and duties, one of which is preparing these sewer service area plans, which are components of a larger area-wide water quality management plan. Some of these requirements even come from the federal government. They are, in most instances, an advisory agency. There are a few exceptions. So they undertake floodplain studies, these sewer service area plans, park plans at the request of local communities, park plans for the region that they do on their own. So they do a number of duties and responsibilities that overlap with environmental protection. From that, they have a...
You know who sits on there?
They have two representatives for every county of the seven counties that comprises the region.
Like, what positions have those people held?
Often, current or existing county board chairmen, county executives, senior staff from governmental agencies.
Bill Drew?
Yes.
Head of Research Park, former head of director of administration for Milwaukee County, former alderman for the first ward, head of the Marquette Alumni Association. Those are the types of people that sit on sewer pack.
Yes. And active and former members as well of these boards and commissions and governmental units. And that's their governing body that has to approve all these plans. So it's important to note that sewer service area plan for Franklin, by the criteria that the state DNR created and sewer pack created, must be reviewed and approved by a local unit of government, then reviewed and approved by this board of commissioners at sewer pack, and then ultimately reviewed and approved by the DNR.
The executive director is?
Ken Younger.
And what does he do?
His original expertise was a transportation planner. He's been at sewer pack for a number of decades, not nearly as much as Kirk Power, but he's been there for a very long time, and he's been the director for 5 or 10 years.
Yeah, I know who he is. I sit on the Aerotropolis board with him, and there's not a single thing that actually occurs without Kurt having some involvement in either transit, airports, roadways. He has a great deal of say and is an extremely powerful figure within the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah, he's very
active. I'm trying to make the point that these are not lightweights by any stretch of the media. And I think they may be appointed by the governor of the state of Wisconsin.
Many, but not all. I believe some of them can be appointed by the county boards of the individual counties. I think one of the two is appointed by the governor of each county, and I believe the other one is appointed by the county board or from a list. And then the technical staff, one of the key persons in the environmental aspects of these sewer service area plans and the field work that goes along with it is Don Reed, a wetland specialist. He trains DNR and Army Corps people. He's the author of numerous books that they use.
You're world-renowned now. Yeah. He also is world-renowned and respected on the national level.
Yes. And while his specialty is wetlands, he's been involved in all aspects of the environmental corridors. And then these environmental corridor concept goes back to the founding of their agency almost 50 years ago. So they have been around for a while. And again, they have evolved over time. Originally, that original plan, back in the 1980s, I can't remember when, I helped prepare that report, my name's in it. Only required protection of primary environmental corridor. But changes have occurred over the decades. The DNR has utilized its ability to oversee this program and made some changes with or without the full support of sewer pack, and some changes that sewer pack wanted to make as well.
I apologize, I didn't mean to go into this depth. I just wanted to make sure that the plan commissioners and the people in the audience understand that the people that represent sewer pack are named Larry, Curly, and Mo. These are very, very serious people who have been held top positions in large governments, and they take things extremely seriously.
Yes, and I'm trying to get across as well that this concept has been vetted for a long time. It's not something that's been around for 2 years. It's almost 50 years. And from the standpoint of being cast in stone, they have made changes over time. So it's not like they ignore what happens in the real world around them. They've tried to adjust. So there is a lot of science and a lot of experience, practical experience behind these environmental corridors. So that's the standard that was applicable to the city until just a few years ago. These standards, this protection of primary environmental corridor, which does not require any direct involvement by the local community. Most local communities ignore this, and it's up to sewer PAC to catch it. And there is a process where they can catch most of these. When I say catch, it means when development occurs within or adjacent to these areas. And that process is the sanitary sewer extensions. They are required by law to review public sanitary sewer extensions and some instances private sewer extensions. They review those primarily for their impact on these environmental corridors. And then they generally recommend that if you're in a primary, they won't approve that sewer extension. They may approve it if you're in a secondary or isolated, and of course they would approve it if you're outside all three. That's the standard that applies to most communities in the 7-county southeastern region, but not all of them. There's a few communities that have never had this plan done, so there is no process for that. And then I'll talk about another change that came just recently. Again, our standards in that table in section 4 of our ordinance.
Can I try and interpret what I think you said? For many municipalities, they may not have natural resource protection components ordinance, so what they use is the sewer PAC standards.
Sewer PAC catches. Yeah, most towns don't utilize this information on a regular basis. Some towns aren't even aware of it.
1,851
odd. Or just the 7-county area. Other parts of the state, some other portions of the state, have similar requirements. Dane County has similar requirements. The Fox Valley has similar requirements. And Brown County and the northeastern part of the state have similar requirements. But there are gaps in the state that have none of these requirements.
I mean, you're talking about the mayoral ad hoc development review committee. My recollection, because we haven't met in a while, is that when Scott Matthey from the Metropolitan Builders Association showed up, there were two things that he said that, my words, that were problematic as he saw it for Franklin. One was our extremely tight fire suppression code.
Correct.
Which has been modified and reduced back to a high standard, but not the extreme high standard. And the second item was the natural resources protection components that Franklin has that are over and above all other communities, which, you know, on occasion we bragged about those things. But from a builder's perspective, a developer's perspective, he said those were the things that the rest of the world looked at as being making friendly, the perception that Franklin is not business friendly. So that, and again, correct, those are my words.
I would go one step further. Their official position is they would recommend all units of government adopt standards which match the state mandated minimums.
That's right.
So even if we make a change like this, they still won't be entirely happy. It's a step in the right direction, maybe in their mind, but what their official position is, they prefer everybody have the same standards, which is the state mandated minimum. It's in their promotional materials.
Well, and the reason that we moved forward with the mayoral ad hoc development review committee, it's a mouthful, was because the economy had fallen off the cliff, and we saw a complete reduction, almost the elimination of development in the city. And so that's why we tried to streamline the process, make Franklin more business-friendly. We were hoping that the economy would come back, but I think it's today's paper, or I just saw it, that they're predicting that we're moving back towards a recession. So not only are we not out of the woods, it looks like we're going in the opposite direction.
And Scott Matthey has complimented us on the changes that we've already made. Streamlining the process, quickening the process are all steps in the right direction, and he has complimented the city on that. Some other communities, I believe, have done that as well. So while maybe immediate the day after we made those changes, we may have been one of the leaders, I think we're probably back in the middle of the pack again. That's just a gut feel in terms of how quick we are reviewing projects. I did do a comprehensive comparison a couple years ago before we finished making these changes. And yeah, before we made these changes to our process was one of the longest and one of the most difficult of all the communities I was looking at. And I was looking at a handful of communities in Milwaukee County and a handful of communities in other counties in southeastern Wisconsin. So a good 12 to 15 communities I was comparing ourselves to. So going back to this, so again, now the revised standards, our UDO has changed. There's been 6 UDO text amendments in the last 4 years to further streamline natural resource-related aspects of the UDO. 6 within 4 years. That's the city side of the equation. Sewer PAC side of the equation, we adopted a revised sewer service area plan last year to include the southwest part of the city in this sewer service area so the Ryan Creek Interceptor Sewer could be built. That's a state requirement and indirect also required by the federal government. But that triggers something the DNR requires, which is the protection of not only the primary, which already has been taken care of, but also protection of the secondary and isolated, which had not been required by Sewer PAC of Franklin. There's about a dozen communities that's required of. Whenever you update your sewer service area plan, then these new standards apply. And about a dozen communities have had to go through this process. Oak Creek, for instance, is one of them. Greenfield and Greendale, but not Hales Corners. So there are a couple communities adjacent to us that also have updated their sewer service area plans, but some which have not. These standards, now starting last year, we now must protect primary, secondary, and isolated. But there's no requirement that the city do it. If we don't do it, and it's only a guide. The plan says it's a guide, and our adopting resolution says it's a guide. But Sewer PAC will, to the best of their ability, administer this plan for us, as they do for every community. And again, referring to that this is a quote from that plan talking about that they have to protect the secondary and isolated, and they primarily focus on the lowland elements of these resource features, the floodplains, the wetlands, steep slopes immediately adjacent to those. They'll be a little more flexible on the upland, the woodlands, and those portions. I prepared a brief comparison, and this is the map that I really wanted to get to. So based on the best mapping that we have now, which is not very good, those colored areas are what are currently protected in the city. And when I say not very good, it's the updated floodplain mapping for FEMA, which is pretty good. The latest information for wetlands from the DNR, which is so-so. Woodlands and steep slopes, not very good. Combination of all those layers, that's the best that we have. That's what we give to applicants.
Not very good in comparison to what?
The real world or sewer PAC mapping.
What about Iowa? What about Louisiana, Texas?
That far away, I wouldn't know. I would say from those parts of the state that have similar standards to sewer PAC, this is bad. Not very accurate, not very good. To those areas of the state that don't have any standards like sewer PACs, this is as good or better than what they
have. I was going to say that I would think it was Wisconsin and its background. In comparison to others, this is just completely, totally outstanding. I mean, it's not as good as you would like.
Well, there's two elements. There's the mapping and there's the standards. Our standards are higher than almost anybody else's.
They are the highest.
But the mapping of those is not very good.
I mean, my understanding is our ordinance is by far
I'm personally not aware of any better.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, and given that Wisconsin is right at the top in reputation for protecting wetlands, and so it's probably the best in the United States, which may go into your category of best in the world. So, it's,
So again, from a mapping standpoint, now this would be sewer PAC's mapping, and we obtained that from them. So this is a combination of the primary, secondary, isolated, and the individual wetlands that both sewer PAC and the DNR are aware of, which is not all of them, but the ones that they are aware of, that's what this map shows, plus their primary, secondary, and isolated corridors. Comparison of those two, so the sewer PAC would be blue. If you look closely, you'll see a few blue areas that pop out, which means those are something that sewer PAC protects that we currently don't. That yellow, again, would be the areas that we currently protect, and the green is where they overlap. So you'll notice you can see a lot of yellow.
Can you pull that up?
I didn't mean literally pull that.
We might be able to zoom in.
It's hard to, I mean, I think it's really, really important that, to see them.
What year is that?
It's sewer PAC mapping?
Yeah.
Last year. We got it right after they updated the sewer service area plan for us.
If it's going to be that, I just thought that. Can't you do like this, Nick?
No, I'm not sure which one it is.
No, we can't do it. I think it's really important to go over that again, though. And then you go to the percentage. Well, you can't be good at everything.
Yeah. So essentially those yellow areas would be the ones that we currently protect but wouldn't be protected by sewer PAC. A couple caveats. One, I've just said that yellow mapping isn't very good. Some of those yellow areas are not really natural resource features. Some of those most of those yellow areas are woodlands and steep slopes. So the steep slope information that we have is based on old soils information. That's the worst layer that we have of everything. And we've run into many situations, and there'll be future maps coming up that show this, where we showed steep slopes and there were none at all. So some of that is overinflated, that area of yellow is not there. But on the flip side, there could be some areas that aren't shown at all that would be protected by our current standards.
I think if you get fit to window,
but still, it's a significant amount of steep slopes and woodlands that probably will not be protected by the sewer PAC standards.
Mr. Haley? If I might, I think that's the really salient point here. Everything you're seeing in yellow are areas that would, subject to the accuracy of mappings, be protected now, which will no longer be protected. This is actually reducing the amount of lands that are protected.
Well, that's why I wanted to blow it up, because I think this is
important point to make. That's what this is showing.
Okay, let me just ask her. Is there a request for a suspension of the rules to allow one of them?
So moved.
Second. It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, I have a motion carries. Well, once I establish, once I establish the precedent,
right there. Looks like
you're
wearing more. I'm sure if I looked at this, it's out there anymore. So this map is not.
don't you say no?
First, related to this document, I have the draft document that Mr. Needle and I worked on. I have a lot of red marks in here. Many of the things that I discussed with him that I was in opposition to are not included in this final draft, and I also did not get a copy of that final draft that has changes in it that we were supposed to work on together. Also, in regard to the council approval and direction, it was never suggested that we would go as far as this concept. The concept was the Mulligan situation. I was to work with him on this. Anything that has asphalt, use common sense, come up with an ordinance that would require people to do things like that. And then somehow it morphed into this whole change. Maybe that was based on the mayoral ad hoc committee wanting to streamline that. But the council, I'd like to, you know, especially all the way here, and even if it came before the council, it might pass, but I want the council to know the move for this was never the intent of that motion, and it never said that in that motion.
With the Mulligan.
With the Mulligan one. And that's what we're basing this all on. What came out of that meeting between Joel and Mark Levert and I was, when I discussed it, I said, maybe you should look at Plan 176. Those are basically the resources in the city. I think that if we identify the resources in the city based on 176, which is pretty much a map we're looking at, it might be a good way to go. And then all of a sudden it came into this that this is what the council said.
Yeah.
So that's not really how it... I just want everybody to know...
Well, and I got to tell you, that's kind of my recollection is that the Mulligan piece was to work on that because it was so ridiculous. I think that this really came in from the Mayoral Ad Hoc Development Review Committee. So the Mulligan piece was staff was directed to work with you on that particular section. As far as this section, I don't believe that the council actually made a motion to have you work or have the council you work with planning staff. So it was just on the Mulligan piece.
Right. So what I'm saying is we had an ad hoc review committee which didn't consist of all the elected officials represent the constituents. It consisted of developers who were pushing their opinions at that meeting. That was not a citizen-based or an aldermanic representative-based recommendation. Just so you know that, because the comprehensive master plan, as we know, when that came through, there were piles and piles of people that said they wanted the resources protected, which is not the same. And we're doing this ad hoc because of the streamlining, but that's because of the economy issues.
You know, if I can, okay. And because of other parties coming forward and saying things like the tree canopy thing is preventing people from developing their property. So there was a lot of things.
Right,
but
Mayor. I heard all about Mr. O'Malley talking forever about the tree canopy and all the things that were inaccurate about what he said, and I listened to the tape.
No, I'm just trying to agree with you that the Mulligan piece was different than this.
But I want to make the point that we're streamlining because the economy is down. When the economy was up, we had these natural resource protection standards in place, and it wasn't preventing development at that time. It may have made them do their duties and look at the resources, but the economy was booming with those in place. So this isn't the result of the natural resources issue. This is a result of the economy. And now people, including developers, are using this to drive a wedge in getting cookie-cutter standards for our city. And I think we have a right to set the standards and not tell people how we want those standards set. As far as the document, it says that delineations are no longer required because they're done. That's a statement I totally disagree with. Delineations are only good for 5 years. Floodplain changes. Development causes floodways to change. You're not going to be able to get away with that and not violate state law. I ask a couple people, if your community was fully developed, what would would you like to see as far as green space and open space in the community? I got all kinds of different answers. Maybe you might each one like to jot down a percentage of what you would like Franklin to look like if it was fully developed every inch of it. Would you be putting down 5%, 10%, 25%, 50%? Some people might want that. Sewer PAC already says in Plan 176 that in 1989, when that 76 was adopted, only 17% of the pre-European settlement natural resources remained in Franklin. So if you put it down on your in your mind, your figure was 25%, you protected everything that's on these maps, you would have only less than 17%. That those areas have been encroached upon and dissected already. You would have less than 17%. You think about what that your community will look like when you're all gone. Is 17% good enough for you? Maybe it is. Maybe it's too much. But that's something you need to think about when we're going to lay out what resources we want to protect. There's a section where it talks about prairies and large savanna trees. That was a recommendation. We have this woodland ordinance, which I agree with Mr. Dietl. It doesn't really do a very good job because Franklin is a prairie community on the west side of the river. The only woodlands we really have, true woodlands, historic features, are on the east side of the river. Because when fire came across Franklin, they couldn't jump in the river. So these large, open-grown, huge, 200-year-old oak trees are your resources. They're not specimen trees. They're part of a savanna habitat. They are savanna trees. That's the part of the ordinance that you should be looking at changing. Protecting the resources that are the resources, not some buckthorn invaded woodland area. Sewer PAC does not want to make waves, and I don't see how they're going to be this big authority body to make recommendations on things. I've seen them work in the city of Milwaukee when we were doing the primary environmental corridor, and I saw how they were really standoffish on taking a stand, so I don't really know how that's going to work. I don't see really the teeth in their documents to protect Franklin. I do agree that the secondary environmental corridors are one of the corridors that has seen the least amount of protection in Franklin. It's the most of those are major waterways. Well, a major one is the Root River. All the other drainage ways that drain into the Root River are comprised in those secondary environmental corridors, and they're not being protected, and they're not being buffered. But what would that mean for the Highway 100 and the West Site? That's a secondary environmental corridor. So if we protected 100%, would Meyer be able to build on that site? So, you know, is that any different than the natural resource protection standards we have now? What standards do we want to have? The last time we went through the ordinance, Mr. Wasilowski was part of that. Dave Fowler was part of that, several people. We had a big public hearing. The Metropolitan Builders Association was invited and part of that, and they were accepting of the ordinance changes, understanding that the NR151 and the wetland standards were increasing, and they didn't object to those at the time. Now, they want us to adopt a cookie-cutter standard. The state standards, every community should be exactly alike. When I went to the Forward Franklin meeting and Scott Matthews was there, he presented a document. He talked about fire codes. He talked about impact fees. He talked about front yard setbacks. Those are all things that we could be addressing instead of attacking the natural resource sections. He didn't have that much to say. Yes, they wanted this flat standard. But as far as the other standards, there was no big jumping up and down on that issue. He had more to say about the impact fees and about the fire code than he ever said about the natural resource. Now, maybe it's because I was in the room.
Can I correct? Did you say, I thought you said Forward Franklin Committee. You meant mayoral ad hoc, right?
No, it was the...
It was the Forward Franklin.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that he appeared.
Yeah, he was there. I have his document. I have highlighted items. And they didn't go real heavy into that. So they know what other communities said they have to protect the resources. They're used to that. I think I talked about the master plan. So I think I've covered most of my issues. but I think the sewer pack concept could work if it was fleshed out, but I'm not sure how we can get there. I think it would be a really long process to do that. And I'm kind of concerned about, you know, the thing that we believe that if we adopt this, we're not going to have to identify the resources anymore. We can just show them a map and say, oh, here you go. As long as you stay out of that, you're good. Because we all know canopy changes. We all know floodplain lines change. We all know delineations change. And the Army Corps, the federal and state laws require you to stick a shovel in the ground, look at the soils, compare them to the Munsell soil chart, and determine if it's a wetland by hydrology, soils, and plants. You can't do that from a piece of paper.
What about floating the canoe? Is that gone?
No, that's still there. That's an apple. I'm talking about isolated. So.
Thank you. Is there a motion to return to regular business? So, is there a second? Second. Further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Ayes have it. Motion carries. Mr. Deal.
I can be almost done. I think I will be after I show these maps. So, these are more detailed maps of comparison of what our best available information shows to what SewerPAC information shows for the same piece of land. So this may be familiar, this is 68th and Rawson, where we had a proposal at one time or a concept review. The black would be the steep slopes, and then the other colors, wetlands and woodlands, based on that best available mapping, and that's from the SewerPAC 176 plan. Much more accurate.
Could you go back, Joel, just real quick?
So yes, also smaller, but I can also tell you that those steep slopes aren't correct. The steep slopes on this particular property are smaller than that. The applicant that's interested in that property did get SewerPAC to go out there and do some field work. So they did find the wetlands increased and the steep slopes are smaller.
I would note that it was actually the planning manager that came forward with the concept of maybe should do is look at SewerPAC.
Yes.
So no decisions have been made. I don't know that anyone actually said outside of yourself that we should look at SewerPAC, and nor has anybody or elected officials said, yeah, let's go.
Can we ask Mr. Baller?
Sure.
Thank you, Mayor. Go to the next slide, Joel, please. I noticed that on the last slide, the theme of floodplain was delineated, and on this slide, it's not. I mean, that's not, I don't know if I'd call the theme of floodplain a natural resource, but it is an area that should be protected.
Yes.
And not allowed for development to encroach. So I'm just curious why it was, I mean, it's not part of the SewerPAC's natural resource protection, but that would be information that SewerPAC, since they now seem to become, they've become the ad hoc keeper of all the floodplain modeling for the county, at least for the Milwaukee Sewage District, and since we're doing most of the modeling for the county, that would be data we would get from them, and we would put that on our natural resource protection plan.
Yes.
It would be areas that we would protect.
Yes. Two ways. One is I'm proposing that we don't change our floodplain or shoreline zoning standards because many of them have federal requirements. So I wasn't proposing to change them at all. So we'd still require protection of the floodplain as we currently do and the shoreline areas. And also, SewerPAC does collect and map floodplains, has that information separately. However, they don't automatically include all floodplains in their environmental corridors. Some instances of farmed floodplains, they don't. They try to pick up most of those when they do these updates. So,
and if I could, Joel, on this map, what I would be concerned about, I think I share some of Alderman Wilhelm's concerns. They have delineated, done a very nice job, and I think in many cases they do have very accurate information. Sometimes they do not have accurate information, but I would be concerned that in the areas where you see the purple on the toward Loomis at the top, and then again down at 68th Street where it crosses 68th, there's that drainage area. But there, what we would not be protecting is those upland areas that would have great impact on those levels. And again, difficult to do, but in many cases, if you go back to the slide previous, we had identified those areas as, I mean, maybe we need to more the steep slopes, but those areas are protected under for a reason because they have impacts on those wetlands. Now, again, it may be, you know, my understanding is when we say protected, I've always understood this to mean that we identify those natural resources and we work with the developer that we may give him leeway to disturb some of those natural resources when he puts together his natural resource protection plan. It's not that we have a hands-off on everything that we've identified as a natural resource, but we at least know where they are and we know what we're losing. My concern is if we adopt the sewer pack, and I agree with Alderman Wilhelm, the data is old. Many of that data is old and outdated, and the sewer pack themselves, I talked with Don Reed on this, and he agrees that some of the data is old and they don't have the staff to keep it updated. And they like the fact, he was impressed that Franklin has a very good natural resource protection pack because we go out and identify them. So I think there's some tweaking that could be done, but I have those concerns. Mr. Bed?
Yeah, I guess my concern would be is I think sewer pack has some specific wetlands that they protect, and that's the shoreline wetlands, isolated natural areas, and of course the environmental corridors. But Don Reed cannot go on anybody's property unless they give permission. We can't even have Don Reed go on anybody's property without getting permission from the property owner. I think you have to turn a shovel. I think the concern I would have is that if we start approving developments without turning a shovel, without going in and having a wetland delineation, one person could come and complain to the Department of Natural Resources that there's wetlands out there. And then all the work that the developer went through and the city went through in approving the development would be for naught, because DNR would go out there and say, oh, yeah, there is a wetland out there. So I think you need to do due diligence to identify the wetlands, and I don't see how you could get away from not doing that. I just don't see how you can get away with not having somebody walk on the property and find the wetlands. We tried, you know, we've done a lot with sewer pack or with Cedarburg Science for our conference and master plan. They did the windshield survey, and it improved the maps that we had. We have a lot more wetlands, especially in the southwest part of the community, than were mapped before. And again, they've just done it by windshield, which is not very accurate. And with the only thought is that that's a good starting point, but you need to go on the property to look to see where the wetlands. I don't see how you can avoid not going on the property and making a wetland determination.
If I could, maybe before you answer, you're coming to the Plan Commission tonight in the same way that a developer would come before the council for a concept review, sort of. You're not asking them to take all of this information that you passed out and make a decision tonight. You're just going, you're looking for, is this something we should pursue or not pursue? But I also think that the reason that Franklin, in almost every community in Wisconsin, is going back to revisit all of their ordinances and looking at things like consolidation of fire departments and health departments and whether it's again combined municipalities, because the state has changed all the laws and every community is trying to figure out how do we keep the library open, how do we keep police officers on the street, because unless you have net new construction, you cannot, it's no longer up to the municipalities whether to raise the taxes. If you don't have net new construction, you cannot raise the levy to pay for things. I'm looking over at Alderman Solomon because both of us know firsthand how difficult the decisions are going to be. We laid off a planner last year. We laid off a building inspector. We had to look at the library. We'll have to look at the library again. So, you know, it's important to share with the Plan Commission, even though I'm not so sure they need this Plan Commission, they should take that under consideration. The big picture here, the state of Wisconsin changed all of the rules, cut the shared revenue, transportation aids. So I'm starting to work on the budget right now. Jack's working on his. It's not looking good. So it's only those rich entities like MMSD that have all the cash.
Well, wait, that's tough.
Yeah. Question. I can't physically see that. Give me the code on the black.
The code would be, the black would be the steeper slopes, 13% or greater.
And what is the reddish?
Slightly less steep slopes, 7% to 12% slopes.
Now, south of Rawson Avenue, that's all developed.
Mm-hmm.
That's full of houses and condos.
It's because that layer is old. It was, that map is from before they built those buildings. That layer, that steep slope soil information layer, is from before those buildings were built. This is the information we give to applicants if they ask for our best available information. And we put that caveat in.
So
this
you can
is the
build on one side of the street is fully developed, but you can't build on the other side.
Yeah, it's a map that we obtained from somebody else. We don't have that original GIS data. We can't go in there and change it. We would have to recreate the map.
And then unboring.
Dave? But I think that's my point, Alderman Solomon, that in these cases, we've identified these natural resources, and there were cases where a development was allowed to move forward. For whatever reason, it was allowed to move forward. I would just point out to the Planning Commission and others that I agree with what the mayor is saying, and we have to be conscious of how we're going to have the funds to make the city get the services that the citizens need. But I also would be conscious of the fact that in 2010, in the great rains that we had that summer, I think it was in June, wetlands were reestablished where people didn't know they were wetlands. The water went back to its places it wanted to go, and in many cases it was in people's basements. And I would be, again, we identify these natural resources to try to do the best consensus, or if you want to use the term compromise, to determine where it makes sense, both quickly or supportive of sound economic growth for the city of Franklin, but also to think that long term, as Alderman Wilhelm pointed out, what do we want to see in 20 years or 25 years? And I think if the people knew their basement had been put into an old wetland that was never properly identified or properly marked, and then that basement filled with water, that's also a cost to some government agency because they're the ones that are being asked to come and fix that issue for those residents. And there were a lot of them that are now looking for redress from the communities where those houses are located. So I'm just cautious. I like Sewer PAC. Sewer PAC's an excellent agency. I work with them all the time. But we just have to be conscious of some of the drawbacks of their information. And I think, as Joel has pointed out, some of the drawbacks of our information. So I think it's a combination of how do we get the best information of the whole, combine it, and use that.
Kevin? Joel, are you mostly done with this?
I'm ready for some comments here.
I have two more examples similar to this, but they're similar to this.
I'd be more willing to look at it, but there's some things I'd like to say that might help with this in perspective. And I'll start by saying I think it's really important that we do find a way to streamline the development process to make it quicker, better, more efficient, less costly, certainly less timely. You know, in some cases, it's taking months for this stuff to move through the system. I will further say that I don't think that making this type of modifications to our natural resource protection standards is going to do that. Alderman Wilhelm touched on it. If we really want to simplify the process, there are other things we should be going after. If we really want to make it cheaper, there are other things we can go after. But that said, that's just perspective, because I do embrace revisiting our natural resource protection standards. There's some things I've got to say that I think no one's really grasping. And I will also start by saying that I have immense respect for Sewer PAC and their staff. I've worked with them for over 25 years. They've got it together. But what really, part of the problem here is that the statement was made is Franklin seems to have the highest standards, but the worst mapping. Unless I'm mistaken, every ounce of mapping that Sewer PAC has is available to this city electronically through the GIS system. The McCamless files are there. Everything they've got over there, we've got here, unless it's a draft document that has not yet been published. And in fact, it's public information. So if for some reason our GIS system has got old data in it, it needs to be purged and updated. Developers, you're telling them, well, you're showing them old data. They can go on the county's interactive mapping site that's got that data out there, and they can look at it for themselves. So there's an issue with
if it's mapping, the technology is there. We need to update our mapping and get the most current in there. Okay, let's talk about wetlands, for example. All these delineations. Well, I'm going to start by something. Now, we all got in our packet this sewer pack brochure about wet environmental corridors. It's fascinating because it's a great concept. And Joel is right. This concept has been around. It was actually, if you will, originally conceived by Professor Emeritus Philip Lewis at UW-Madison. My professor studied under a brilliant man. He came up with this concept, and it's been widely adopted. And I think it makes a lot of sense. However, if you look at this map, it's protection of primary environmental corridors in southeastern Wisconsin. And if you can navigate your way to Franklin, right about here, in the middle, you will notice that with few exceptions, a couple of tiny little red dots down by the county line, all of the primary environmental corridors in Franklin are currently protected.
Wait a second. I want to know how you got a colored map and how those got black.
Well, I'm glad the mayor's got the same problem as I have. I got black and white.
Well, forgive me. I'll be glad to let you look at mine.
Okay. And you maybe...
The point is, our environmental corridors are protected, and this is largely in part as a direct result of your Milwaukee County Park system. All of the environmental corridors in Franklin are related to the Oak Creek watershed. You won't find any on the eastern or the western boundaries. They go right through the middle along the Root River corridor. So let's not get bogged down in primary environmental corridors. They've all been butchered. The only ones that exist are already protected. They're in parkland, or the few that are not are protected by our ordinances. If we soften our ordinances, then more of those areas will disappear. That map will have to change, and you'll see more red on it than you'll see green on it. So let's stop talking about primary environmental corridors. What we have left are secondary environmental corridors and isolated natural areas, which are the exact same thing, only smaller. They're the remnants, the fragmentation of our primary environmental corridors. For the past 150 years, we've allowed our community to be built up, and we have slowly pummeled our natural resources to the point where they almost don't exist. Okay? So with that in perspective, I believe in the ability of development to coexist. Alderman Wilhelm brought up the 17%. I'd wager it's significantly lower than that now. And yet, we spend a great amount of effort into making sure that every applicant with the development plan puts in a significant landscaping plan. We mandate trees, we mandate shrubs, all different kinds. We want canopy, we want decorative, but we'll let them butcher the ones that are there. We'll let them butcher the native ones, the oaks, that don't require maintenance, that don't need to be sprayed with herbicides or water. So, again, we're missing the point here. If we really want to make the system more efficient, then you update your records, you make the GIS data available to every developer, and they will immediately look at that, and before they even put pen to paper, before they even go to their consultants, they'll be able to look at my site and go, oh, this area is protected, this is not. I will now focus here. Instead, they look at the whole 100%, they do a site plan, and then they go and they look and go, oh, there's red stuff in there, there's green stuff in there, now I got to redo everything. I want to make some specific examples. Not too long ago, there was a church before us that wanted to build a new church down between Loomis Road and Ryan Road at 116th. And you can probably all remember my diatribe at the time. But basically, I said, there's a lot more natural resources there than their plans are showing, than available information. And that's because the available information showed the existing wetlands on the edges of the site, but not the fact that almost the entire site was what's known in the business as a prior converted wetland, meaning it has all the attributes of wetland, except that the vegetation has been removed and replaced with corn. And the fact is, sewer packs mapping, and I want to get back to that, they don't map prior converted wetlands unless they've had a reason to go on the site and physically turn, shovel, and delineate. So when you look at their mapping, it doesn't show. So there's these huge areas that within, I would say, a year or a year and a half of stopping farming on them will revert to wetlands because the soils and the hydrology are there and the plant seed bank is there and present. And to that case specifically, now you look at that. The church spent a lot of time and money. They came in with a site plan. They obviously looked and shopped around. And unfortunately, I shot them down. I went home feeling a little bit guilty. Looked at the available information, the soils mapping, which, agreed, could use some updating. And I was wrong. I underestimated by probably a factor of two. More of the site than I even envisioned just from my having seen it day to day was actually hybrid soils. They're these prior convert. So these are all the things that fall through the cracks. What we need to understand is, as the alderman mentioned, wetland delineations are only good for 5 years. Whatever protections Franklin puts on them are great, but we're still being trumped by the state and federal government that write the standards that we have to comply with, and we're doing a disservice to our developers when we let them get to 80 or 90% plans only to find out that they've got wetland issues because it hasn't been properly delineated. You want to save them time and money? The first thing they should be required to do is look at the available information. If it's all paved in asphalt, it's very apparent that there are no natural resources. If there's even a hint that there might be, then they need to go out, hire a professional, either get sewer pack or a licensed, trained wetland delineator to mark those, survey those, and then you know exactly where it is. The fact is, and I'm not so sure if many of you are aware of the whole wetland mapping process, it's a dynamic thing that grows every day. The state, the DNR, has the Wisconsin Wetland Inventory, and things are only added to that as new information is gathered from field testing and then verification by sewer pack and the DNR. The DNR has to certify all wetland delineations. Then once that's happened, then sewer pack, especially if they've done the delineation, requires those areas to be surveyed accurately by a surveyor, and that information gets put into the GIS database. So they just found a new wetland that was out in the middle of the field that nobody knew about. It added it to the records. So you're right, they have far better records than we do, but that's because we haven't updated them. But they are not 100% accurate. They don't address anything that's never been delineated. There's no way of knowing. And I'm going to give you a quote that I thought was really appropriate because it came right out of the little sewer pack write-up in our packet. Sewer pack quote. Precise delineation of environmentally significant lands can only be determined through field investigation. I've worked with Don Reed for over 25 years. The guy knows his stuff. His crews can go out in short order, put flags, delineate an area at no cost to us or anybody we requested for. So, then DNR comes in and they certify. They come in and double check, verify that in fact it is wetland. Somebody surveys it, it's now into the system with great accuracy. We know more every day, but we can't rely on sewer pack. Some of their standards are great, but as we talked about looking at the one drawing, there's a whole bunch of areas that currently are protected in Franklin that'll just fall off and will no longer be protected. That'll be the net effect of it. And you won't see developers saving any time or money because, gee, the poor folks at the church that spent a fortune on an entire site plan, and you notice they haven't come back. It's because they did their homework and they found out, oh, damn, if I'd have known this sooner. So we didn't save them money, we didn't save them time, and we just discouraged somebody that may just go someplace else where the ground's a lot higher. We run into the same thing. We're in the quagmire with the whole Meyer development. What are we held up on? Well, we don't know how the Corps of Engineers and the DNR is going to determine exactly what is wetland, what's not, what can be impacted, what can't. So 120, 130 days later, the developer is still sitting there. I can't even think about what they spent on site planning. And it all might change because DNR or Corps will send a letter saying, we agree with this, but not that, change everything. One little modification causes the whole site plan to shift. So again, I don't want to just sit here and berate all this. If our goal is to truly protect our resources and our goal is to make things better for developers, then this is the way we can help them, is by identifying right up front all of the restrictions on their land. You know, we look at setbacks, we look at natural resources. You guys do a great job of doing that upfront analysis, but quite frankly, the developers should be doing that on their own. They shouldn't come in with a two-dimensional thing on paper and never have walked the site or gotten a feel for it. You then tell them these things. They don't want to hear that. And go, oh, damn, you know, now I can't pave or put my building right in the middle of this area because it's a wetland. They're being disillusioned. So I think the best thing we can do is good, accurate delineations. And it starts with, in the office, using GIS systems, but it needs to be delineated. If it's obvious, turn, you walk away. If it's even close, then you require that infield delineation. It can be done in a matter of days, this is assuming we're not in the middle of winter. And DNR comes out, does the same certification to verify that it's fact. We now know more. So I think that's the important thing, is with all of these, we are not going to change the state of the federal standards. We put a standard that's a little bit better because we protect buffers. Because the idea with those buffers is that hopefully it will help keep our primary environmental corridors or our secondaries from being further fragmented, because we're protecting the root zones, the canopy. So I could talk on for hours, as you can well imagine, but I think
it's pretty good.
It makes sense for staff to revisit this, but not in terms of just adopting sewer pack standards. What I'd love to see is the process, because is it the intention that a developer comes in, brings a set of plans, and we send one out to sewer pack, and then they sit down and they review it and go, well, you got this and you got that? Or are we just adopting their standards and then enforcing them and analyzing them individually here? See, this is where I don't think it gets any better, and I think we're going to end up shooting ourselves in the foot, because the developers won't be any happier with it. It'll just be different, and they'll have someone else or something else to complain about. We can help them best by doing good site planning, which is what our staff does, and by knowing the truth, the reality. It's not this developer drives by a big farm field, looks at that, says, oh, beautiful subdivision, can't wait to have it happen. At some point, they need to come into grips with reality, and the sooner, the better. That's how they save money. That's how their developments get better, and that's how they get happier and start smiling. And, Mayor, you're right. A lot of this is being driven by the market, but as you've also heard me say, you know, ultimately, Franklin will be all developed. It doesn't all have to happen tomorrow, and the market could change tomorrow. And the thing that will keep people wanting to live in Franklin is a large amount of undisturbed natural resources. And if we're not identifying them, and if we're not protecting the buffers around them, and you've heard me talk about that too, it's on paper, plans are one thing, but when you get dozers in the field, they trample silt fences, they encroach upon buffers, the damage is done. And that's why I think it makes good sense to know exactly where it happened on a plan, have big, bold buffers that protect these areas, and force the development away from the natural resources and look at them as an amenity rather than a threat. Because, unfortunately, that's the way our developers are looking at it. Every natural resource on that site, it represents one less lot I can develop. It's a profit-driven thing. And I think that we all are aware there's other developers out there that embrace the natural that actually can get more money for fewer parcels, potentially even smaller parcels, by treasuring and embracing that amenity. And maybe that's the sort of developers we should be encouraging to come to Franklin, not those that feel, I just want to get my plan in and out and approved. You can help them best, good, accurate information up front, and good guidance. And I heard several suggestions. I never intended to go anywhere with the other things that could be done to streamline our process or to encourage development, but they're there. And impact fees is one of them. And don't you hear more complaints about that? Don't you hear more complaints about taxes? Now, I understand. Budget's all very real. And there's this perception that Franklin's taxes are high. And we know that relatively they're not.
I've heard that.
But those are the things that discourage developers and people from coming here. We need to overcome that. Revamping our natural resource protections to water them down doesn't help. We should embrace sewer pack standards, adopt them, have something even better than that, set that standard, and utilize their information. Like, we're the ones that are controlling the plans. I don't envision it. Again, the process isn't in here. I don't see how sewer pack is going to be directly involved in looking at a plan. So how does that help things? It introduces another layer.
First of all, I think what I'm hearing and listening to Jack Bennett, Kevin Haley, between the two of them and their expertise in these areas, what we're looking at 60 years, something like 70 years of experience. I thought the thing that you said was really important, Kevin, is that we need to tell the people, and we're, you know, it's not that I think that somehow Myers was lured to Franklin because of our dynamic marketing thing. They went out and they studied different sites, and as they said, they're only interested in that site. But I think you're right that right from the get-go, if these are difficult parcels, we are doing ourselves a favor as a city with our reputation, and we're doing the developers and business a favor by telling them right off the bat that we think, based on past experience or because of studies, that these are very, very difficult projects that maybe need to go up on the site instead of having it sprawling. In the case of Meyer, as you may remember, I did tell them that right from the get-go with that particular site that that was going to be very difficult, very controversial, and tried to hint to them, well, not hint to them, say, show them different parts of the city, because we had shops at Legend Creek. I don't really know what exactly happened. I mean, there's a lot of rumors, but one of the big ones was wetland issues. Okay. Now you have another developer in there, wetland issues. And the DNR, whether people want to agree with it or not, when it comes to our ordinances, no matter how strict they are, the DNR is going to supersede because it's state law. And then you have the U.S. Corps of Army Engineers, which is really, you know, it would be wise for us to start the conversation on that versus having it at the end of the conversation that we normally do. So I don't know how we get there. I do know one thing while you were talking about the GIS system. I asked Jack, so I think he said, yeah, we can update that. So we, whatever data is there, and I've been to the site, the sewer pack site with maps and all that. I mean, you can get anything you want. Make it all available. So, you know, maybe that's the way to do it. And then, I mean, you look at the map that you showed us in the packet, not this one, but the other one with the yellow and the green. And the, we went through this during the Comprehensive Master Plan. Franklin is loaded with wetlands. Now, if you ask a lot of people, they'll say, yeah, but that's not a wetland. Well, if the DNR has said that's a wetland, it's a wetland. And we have to stop that conversation going that, okay, just because the DNR said it's a wetland doesn't make it a wetland. It is a wetland. And I agree. I think we're doing, we have the possibility of giving the city a bad name by, if you don't tell them up front that there's some problems with it, or that certain types of developments are only going to fit in there, in the long run, we're going to have flooding problems, and we're going to get a reputation of basically lying to these developers, so, or misinforming them. But anyhow, I think what I'm getting, Joel, is sewer pack, the standards there are okay, but we also need to try and protect the secondary, the stuff in the secondary environmental corridor. And the only way that, like Jack said, the only way that you can really do that, Oliver Wilhelm said it too, is you've got to get out there and you've got to put a shovel in the ground. And sewer pack doesn't appear to do that. So,
well, they do, but not until they're asked.
Okay. Alderman Solomon.
I have a question of Joel. Do we have all of our natural resource protection on a checklist? When a developer walks in the front door, you need to check these issues, and, oh, by the way, here's your GIS map of this particular parcel, whether it's 10 acres, 20, or 50. Do we give them a checklist with just with the natural resources? I realize in the UDO it's, you know, section by section by section. It'll take them 3 weeks to find it all.
We wanted to. What we do is, yes, we'll give them an aerial photograph, a paper copy, sometimes electronic, with what we have in-house. We'll also print off parts of the UDO that apply to them if they want us to. So we can give them that table that's in Section 4 that lists all the resources and the percentages that have to be protected. We will often do that. We don't have checklists. We were hoping to put a checklist in with our application forms, but that didn't happen.
You know, in my opinion, we have probably better maps than almost any other community has for the simple reason that during the Comprehensive Master Plan, we had Cedarburg Science as a sub-consultant go out and look at the whole city to determine what looks like possible wetland. Most other communities don't have that. They have, you can use soil maps, which is very good because if they're hydrate soil, or, and then you got the, on the edge, you got hydrate conclusions, which really aren't hydrate soils, so that may be the gray area, but the hydrate soils are pretty much, that's it. We have that, and the biggest thing is we have from the comp plan, right on our GIS, just a click to get. And you have everything that Cedarburg Science went out and developed for. So I honestly think, but you still, because both of us said, you still have to go on the property because prior converted is hard to tell from a distance. To get the exact shape of these things, you have to, not only do you have to go out and put the stakes in, you have to have a surveyor go out and transfer that to a map. And until you do all that, you don't really have the natural resources shown. So the whole thing, I really have to tell everybody that do an NRPP before you even make an offer to purchase, almost. And if the NRPP can be as simple as having a biologist go out and look at the parcel and say, there's no natural resources, don't worry. And then you've got it. Or, hey, we got to really take a look at this area over here, and then they go out and do their full thing, and you get it free for sewer pack. It doesn't cost anything if they're willing to wait, and if Joel sends a letter to Don Reed saying to do it, Don will do it, and it won't cost the developer one red cent to do it, except to survey it once they get done.
And I think there's a model for that. The state of Wisconsin and their wetlands plan on how they were working with developers on their wetlands in the past was they would meet with them on property what they were interested in. So the developers knew to come to the DNR first when they even suspected there were wetlands to work with them before they even thought about buying it. I think there is a model of how that can be done. But that was just one natural resource, which would be the wetlands. But for all the ones that we have, they could do that. They could consider they're interested in a piece of property. I don't know what the difficulties of doing that would be. Maybe they don't want people to know that they're interested in the property. But there might be ways we could try to work with them ahead of time and say, these are the properties that have these, or delineate those as best we can and show these are these properties. I thought Meyer was aware of some of the issues on that property.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. With the Shops of Legend Creek, we had prior experience. We went through the stuff. Okay, and I think they got all this. Okay, there it is. Be up front with them. Because the worst thing we want to do is have a reputation that we're steering them in the wrong location.
But in my understanding on the Shops, they didn't take some of the advice that was given them about where to locate their stormwater pond, and the driveway was over, or the parking lot ended up being over the wetland, and it didn't have enough stability in that soil to support that driveway. That's why it looked like a
roller coaster. Well, we're also, we're talking about, I said net new construction on that, but we have a lot of sites within Franklin, just on Rawson Avenue, there's large parcels of land that could be redeveloped. We have large tracts of land. I'm just thinking, just on 76th and Oakwood Road, between Oakwood and Ryan Road, the amount of land that's there, it's open. It's not going to require a lot of taking down trees or moving wetlands and all that. So maybe what we should do is, with Ford Franklin, is send them some of the information that we're talking about. Like, okay, one of the best things you can do is maybe have them call Sewer Pack or give them the information about the land that they're talking, or better yet, steer them in the direction of the land that is least problematic in development. Instead of allowing them to, just think that everything that's on the map, there's no problem. We have a city that's the map that you showed. It's clearly full of wetlands. I don't think the Plan Commission is saying absolutely no, don't do sewer pack. But I think we got a long ways to go here. Mr. Franklin got his hand.
I don't want to get all scientific, but The EDC got presentations on this material, but it was by Jim O'Malley. We had a developer tell us what was wise about this. He showed slides, overhead slides of trees, and I felt like an Allied pilot being briefed before a bombing run, you know, that we don't need that, we don't need that, and it was as if they were giant reptiles that were... The developers are plainly hostile towards the language. They're hostile towards listening to the sorts of things that Alderman Wilhelm is concerned with and we are concerned with. Ask anybody in the city, what is the primary feature of Franklin that you very much enjoy, that you enjoy for your kids, for your parents? And they don't know anything about wetlands and delineations. They don't know any of that stuff, but they do know, oh, I like green space. I like the natural areas. And that's the golden goose. That's the golden goose. And sometimes the golden goose lays tiny little eggs. Like right now, we're getting tiny little eggs. But all these developers are hungry for chicken. And once you have that chicken dinner, the golden goose is gone. So remember, let's not have chicken dinner yet. The eggs will come back. I told you I was going to get scientific.
It's a pretty good analogy.
I don't know. I think that was pretty good.
You weren't supposed to say anything
else. I'm really limited because, say, you know, I officially climbed off the soapbox and more on the positive note. I think that going forward, it really makes a lot of sense to adopt sewer pack standards. We should find some way of weaving ours with theirs and meeting or exceeding them. Now, the process by which we do that, that's where it's going to get a little bit ugly. But it may be simple. Mayor, when you were talking about, as we did the planning for the Southwest area, and Jack, what Cedarburg Science did, not only was find the resources and delineate them for it, but if you remember the one exhibit where they showed the fragmented secondary environmental corridors and isolated areas and actually showed recommendations of how to rebridge them, make them grow. And maybe part of the approach is to, for us to do, especially, and maybe start in the Southwest, is do a mapping exercise where we show all of those resources that we would see protected, that would fit within the two sets of standards, and these bridge areas, the reconnections, draw a polygon around them and say to all developers, this is the stuff you don't touch unless you can come in with science that says, this is okay. Then they'll know. They won't even think twice about it. Then we won't have farmers holding on for the millions of dollars they've been promised someday to retire on because their land is so valuable. And yet they're the ones that know where all those wetlands are out there and back. So that might be a means by which we could simplify this, is just show the areas that we would consider completely out of bounds, untouchable. And an applicant can still come in and say, you know, we'll look at the site and we'll modify those lines and show you otherwise. But that's the way we might actually come up with the standard that's all-inclusive, something we can brag about and is easily viewable by any developer. To be able to look at a simple map on the website, and if it's hatched, you know, you're going to be discouraged from building there. It's got to be a real simple tool up front.
Yeah, or, you know, I agree with you. Or, you know, the stuff that John brought in with the, they're not apartment complexes, they're resident dwelling units that are like down on the river, Milwaukee River. By the way, I talked to that architect about building those. Right? You know, well, this is difficult. However, if you go up with the development, or if you look at cluster development there, you know, maybe that would be a better thing, and you still might be able to get the same amount of tax value, tax revenue out of it. I think it's just we're just entering a different era now, where you know municipalities are just going to have to just be creative and innovative and bent to try and work with stuff. But we did go out of our way as a plan commission to try and do whatever we could to protect both the primary and secondary environmental corridors. And it's, you know, Dave knows it best. It's just not wise to allow people to build places that are in flood zones or that are going to create problems in the future, because eventually the city may have to pick up the tab on that, the taxpayers.
You can identify those properties right now, even during these dry periods. You'll find where their sump pumps are still running. There are properties near Ben Franklin Elementary School. There are properties on east of 76th Street. They obviously are in some type of hydric soil. The wetland, and when we have these heavy rains, now that we're going through a drought, they don't run as much. But when we have rains, they're asking the city to fix it. I know Jack gets those calls.
I said the other night that, you know, maybe the process should start with the DNR and with the DOT. You know, because it seems like every single project we have that comes in here, we're always wrestling at the end is the DNR going to approve this, or is the DOT going to work with us? And what you do is you stir the pot within your own community needlessly. And then you have no jurisdiction or no authority over the final agency that's going to make the final decision. And from what I understand, that's the way the process used to work.
If I could, I mean,
for me, it is extremely frustrating.
I think that's the idea of the connectivity committee that we have, that we actually would have some pushback with DOT for transportation. I think the same thing could be said for these natural resource protections. We can begin to identify those ahead of time and show, again, not everything is developable. I mean, Oliver Solomon makes a good point. If you look at that map, you say there's nothing left to build on. But we can find those areas that are going to be excellent spots for development, and we can begin to identify and have those ready when these developers come in and have a checklist to say, check these. We've checked some of these already at the city. We know some of the things that are there, but you need to check and make sure these other things are not there. And we've kind of got these areas. Look at the master plan. These are the issues we think are going to be good for development.
Yeah, just on Alderman Solomon's statement, I didn't hear him say that, but.
Are you talking?
Wes, yeah. West, so you guys are keeping the same. West Dallas, West Milwaukee, Glendale would kill to have just that one stretch of land from Oakwood Road to Ryan Road, from 76th Street to 97th Street. They have nothing.
Well,
so, I mean, there's lots of areas. And, you know, we did the plan and we did the sewer project. That project is a 100-year project. You know, it's what the sewer project does is it gives this city, future leaders, options. Do you have to go out and asphalt the whole city? No. Who in the world would want to live in a city like that anyway? If you want to do that, go down to Chicago.
I don't mean to disparage West Dallas, but they're living through some of the problems of their own creation. And we've come in and we've actually been removing properties that are taxable income. We've been taking houses out because they're no longer sustainable. These people can't live in those houses because of the flooding issues or the wetland issues. They've had ponding issues. They've had stormwater issues that they are now dealing with as their system ages, as ours will. We'll have those same issues. And particularly, we continue to ignore some of the wetland areas and we allow the for building to go in there. And that's my concern. I share a lot of Kevin's concerns. We don't want to be put in that position.
John? One of the leveraging areas we have, one of the only leveraging areas we have with developers is when they go into a difficult space like this, you can not so much make demands, but you can make the strong suggestion that instead of you're using this whole area and creating this giant impervious surface, do what the DNR suggested, which was, in their process, they have a pre-plan meeting. But because the economy is the way it is, Myers went to the pre-plan meeting with the full plan. Their feeling being, we're going to get what we want. And that's the message I got from the DNR when I made the phone call and asked them, what is the process? Why do you surprise them? Why do we have to wait? They said, you don't have to wait. We have a pre-planning meeting. They chose not to avail themselves to that. Now they owe us proof that they can't put a parking structure on, that they can't put multi-story on there. Now, had we as a planning commission voted against what they brought forward and against the different resolutions, the pressure for them to accommodate that space would have been much higher. Now they have no pressure to accommodate that space. And the whole space will be taken, and the neighbors are going to pay for it down the road. It might be a chicken dinner.
Randy, here.
Well, it's where are we going from here? You know, a lot of good things have been said. I agree with a good deal of it.
somewhere in the back of my mind, there's a phrase of what Milwaukee County owns 1/6 of Franklin.
Yep.
So I think we learned when we went through the comprehensive master plan update process that, yeah, there are going to be challenges in the undeveloped part of the city. And just putting sewer out there isn't going to make those challenges going to go away. So if we can get there, you know, I would certainly agree. Let's put bringing more and better on-site, delineated information into the development application process as early as possible. Also in the back of my mind, there's, we do have people who have been owning farmland for a long time and want to cash out on it, and may not be totally realistic about how developable, they've seen what has been done, subdivisions springing up, the 80s and 90s, the torrid growth that we had, and, they just anticipate that that's going to happen. We need to find some way to help them get to reality. On the other side of the coin, there's the, there's the potential challenges of somebody saying, well, you're not letting me develop my land. You're taking my property from me. I agree there's got to be a middle ground there somewhere. How do we get there? We can talk a lot of good things. I think, we give it back to staff and say, okay, take into consideration all that's been discussed here and see. I can certainly agree with us find better ways to, we've had a goal for a long time of expediting the development process. And certainly the suggestion of bringing accurate site information into the process as early as possible is one way to facilitate expediting the development process. So let's look into ways to make that happen. Also the other contents in the mailing has been a very good discussion here. But right now, the best thing to do is put it back to staff and say, okay, plug all these factors in and come up with a roadmap of where we can get it.
Get that done by tomorrow.
I do have a concern, though. I have a motion from the Common Council that I don't think is consistent with what the Plan Commission is saying. So I'm in a bind. Their motion is to direct staff to prepare an ordinance to exempt all development and land use applications from natural resource protection plans. I don't think that's consistent with what we're talking
about. That's not the motion. The motion continues, doesn't it?
And conservation easements.
That are not within 100, is it?
No, that's correct.
That's pretty limited.
That's limited.
No, what they're saying is if we're not aware of any natural resource features within 100 feet, we can't make them do an NRPP. We will not make them do an NRPP. No, all development. Right now we have redevelopment. That's a UDO text amendment already. It's the same thing. Essentially, it's the same thing as what we have right now in the UDO because of a couple years ago, UDO text amendment for existing development. Existing development wants to increase its size, add accessory structures, that kind of stuff. No known natural resources within 100 feet. No natural resource protection plan. Use best available information. That's what they said they want to do for all development. Brand new development. You build a subdivision, you don't know where the houses are going. You only know where the roads are going to go. So if they have big lots, they don't have to do NRPPs. Anything that's farther away than 100 feet or a shopping center. They're doing something in phases.
Well, you actually, if that's a motion from the Common Council, you have no discretion.
Yes. But we thought that...
It's not like a little invitation or anything.
Right. But we were hoping that a proposal like this, which we perceived as a compromise between our current standards and where they wanted to go, may be acceptable. And we had talked to the maker of the motion, Alderman Taylor, and he was open to this.
I was going to call you Alderman Hale, but Kevin's good.
Maybe part of the answer there, you are in a very difficult situation then, comes from availing ourselves of the most current mapping, getting it up and actually doing an exercise, sort of as I suggested. Maybe the council needs to see if we took all of the most current information that's out there and overlaid it, draw a boundary around that, put a 100-foot buffer around it, and said, these are the areas you're talking about, and there aren't a lot of them. I mean, maybe it's mean, I think the operative phrase in there was based upon best knowledge. But we need to get that information updated. It's there.
We have all that information.
You've got all the most current McCamless.
Absolutely.
Then why are we saying it's not up to date?
Because we'll be missing all those small wetlands. We've already talked
correct.
About how sewer pack misses wetlands.
Okay. So
we miss wetlands.
So I understand this. So this is where I'm confused is what the council is thinking. If you've got an undelineated small wetland in the middle of the field, and Franklin says, go ahead, you can build on it because we don't protect that, it's not known, then what happens when it becomes known?
But we if we used all the Cedar Burg Science wetlands that were identified, if we used all the soils that we have to determine for wetlands, we put all that together, and then we also take the floodplain, have all those, that's all digital, we have that. We have everything. We could put a map together that says these areas really aren't developable, or you're going to have to do mitigation, or you're going to have to push things around. It would not be difficult at all to make a map and put all this together, and that would be the best information that we have from soils, from Cedarbury Science, and we can use the environmental corridors from sewer pack. We can use all sewer pack maps. We can put a map together that we could have available in either digital or hard copy, which would show a high percentage of the areas that aren't developed. Not all of them, because until you go out in the field, you won't get all of them. But that would be better, even better than sewer pack.
And it would be consistent with the council's directive because it would be utilizing
right.
all of the most
right.
current available information.
Right.
And just the one small point is what we a lot of this we're talking the minutiae, all the different types. Most of this stuff, the de facto is it falls within the 100-year floodplain, which we're not developing anyways. We would be foolish to develop. So I just think that type of mapping you're talking about brought back and showed to the council and say, this is what we're yeah, but you were the one, excuse me, Joel, that said this is based upon inaccurate, outdated information. Let's get it correct.
But it's everything that we have. That is everything that we have. It's the Cedarburg Science information. It's the sewer pack wetland information. It's the DNR wetland information. It's the FEMA floodplain mapping. It's all those things
okay.
right there.
So,
is there a city attorney?
How about a motion to direct staff to prepare a report on the discussion at this plan commission as a draft return to the plan commission for ultimately sending it to the common council with the plan commission's point of view on the subject proposal because the ordinance itself is in one sentence. Send it back to the common council with the plan commission's feelings about this.
Sounds good.
Because frankly, everything I've heard tonight city doesn't have to do anything because based on all the comments here, it's all there. This stuff happens up front, and the developer does it different. It's all there.
How about anybody want to make that motion?
I'll make that.
All right. Is there a second?
Yeah.
Okay. Under discussion, Mr.
I certainly don't disagree with that, but the thought has been going through my mind. I can't remember the last time we had a joint meeting with the common council. Perhaps that, rather than making staff jump through, not that staff couldn't put something together to be a memorandum, but rather than staff have to crank out a report and then we go meeting back and forth, meeting, should we at least consider the possibility of joint meeting with the common council to try to achieve a meeting of the minds? I would just toss that out as another alternative to consider.
Just given the scope of the type of meeting that would be, I think you'd almost have to have like a full Saturday morning or something.
Well, this is the future of our city. This is not
yeah,
a small talk.
I'm all for it. As you know, I was here for many Saturdays.
I would be very supportive of that because I do think if the staff could put together some talking points to lead that discussion with the Planning Commission and the Council, I think that would be an excellent idea if the Council would go along with it. And we have some aldermen here. I don't see anybody jumping up and down and saying no. But I think that would be an excellent idea, and I'd be in full support of that.
Okay. All right, we got a motion on the floor. It's been seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
six ayes, no noes, ayes have it, motion carries.
Could you recreate, excuse me, Mr. Mayor?
Ms. Alderman Solomon.
Could you recreate that with some more pronounced colors on the overlay?
Our original map has a legend that has a listing of all the layers that we used, but it's 25 or 30 different layers, and I thought that would be too confusing. So we do have, and staff also had a hard time coming up with enough colors and patterns to show all of those. So for the length of that list and the difficulty of trying to show them all different, we just lumped them all into one. So I could do that. It would probably be best done as a GIS map where I can turn it on and off each layer. As long as you don't need it on a paper, I don't think it's going to work very well on a paper map. As long as the electronic version is good enough, we could do something.
Mr. Haley and Mr.
Just to reference it, I think, and you're right, GIS is the best way to turn it on and off, but I think the operative lesson is it is the boundaries of all of these things. If you're showing a map that just shows everything within this boundary has got some level of natural resource protection on it, and then if you showed a 100-foot buffer around those areas, what you'd be showing to the council is anything that's not colored is where somebody by your directive could go in and develop something. It's only when they start to touch one of these that it would pull the trigger around within 100 feet of known. And we don't necessarily need to see all the colors in the underlying. We just need to know those that are protected.
And then the other thing is focus on the merging of the two standards or focus on the motion of the council, my report, or a combination of both.
Mr. Ritter?
In responding to Joel's question?
No, you
have to handle it. I just want to clarify on one point. Perhaps I misunderstood, but I thought you made a comment earlier about the information that was being given out to developers included showing steep slopes running across Frozen Avenue. And yet I'm being told, well, we've got all the latest stuff in our system. If we've got all the latest stuff in our system, why are we giving out to developers information that shows steep slopes running across Wisconsin or Frozen Avenue?
I talked to our GIS manager, Todd, and in particular to steep slopes. He needs a software package to take our topo information to show it as polygons of steep slope. And we don't have that package. It's over $10,000 to acquire. He thought there was freeware that he could use to do that. It's not available. So that one layer alone is a $10,000 software package to be able to transfer our GIS topo information into polygons of steep slopes. I assume, because I've gone over a similar exercise up in Brown County to try to do something like this, that there'll be other examples to translate some of this old information into accurate information. When we got to over $100,000 to map the county board tells us stop. We're no longer interested in pre-mapping natural resource features. I was afraid that we'd run into a similar situation here with our budget constraints. I was afraid we'd have no chance to do that. So I can look into that.
You should take that to Fort Franklin and tell them as part of an economic development initiative that they would want to champion. Because it's $10,000, but you're talking multi-million dollar development. And you're also talking about the reputation of the city, which is
I'm just going to make a quick suggestion, if I might. Have a look at using the right-of-way layer as a cookie cutter, as a fence for eliminating those. So just blow away any resources that fall within the street right-of-way. So clean all that stuff up and have a much more meaningful image. It wouldn't be creating and changing everything, but you don't care about any of the actual resources that fall within the street right-of-way because it's non-developable. Could literally remove the topography in those areas using it as a fence, the GIS tool. We can talk more about it, but I think it can be done without expensive software.
All right, I'm going to go use the monitor. I think I've never done this. So, Mr. Ritter, so.
All this? All thing? Some of what county's name? Put that in a different color code. That's not discussable. We never want to discuss that. Put down there, that's a done deal. That's in the floodplain. There is no discussion. You can't build it. So instead of putting this whole thing up here, you know, let's start talking about those areas that, you know, you've got, what's the park up here? Franklin Park, right?
Yeah.
Right. It's that is gone from discussion. Put it in a different color. You got the land that's east of 112th Street. That's done. We're not going to develop that.
The quarry.
Put them on there and get the stuff so we get down to what is it that's, you know, important. Discussions that you can have on some wetlands, and then those of wetlands that are, there is no discussion about it. It's out, for one thing, it's out of your hands. It's out of the city's hands, out of our jurisdiction, like this whole strip. Yeah. Instead of putting a map up here with all the wetlands, you know, some of the wetlands, people and developers will tell you, because it's their land, we can mitigate that. We can move those. It's not a problem. This, you can't mitigate anything. You know what I'm saying? It's going back to when I was in labor negotiations. Take the stuff off the table. It's unimportant. Clean up. Quit putting stuff on here that everybody thinks, well, it's a disaster. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
And that's it. And the other thing is, those areas that have already been developed, okay, get them out of there. So we're talking, the discussion group takes place. We're only going to be talking about those areas that can be developed. So that you're steering, like if I'm a corporation coming in from Ohio, I look at that. I don't know that whole big strip in the middle is Milwaukee County parkland that can never be touched. So let's make it clear to them.
If I could, Mayor, also suggestion, I believe there are unmapped floodplains. There are non-regulatory floodplains on some of our tributaries to the river. They should be put on there in a different color than the FEMA, but they're also kind of off the table. The city would like them off the table because they would have future impacts. Potential. The 100, whatever our setback is, it's 100 feet where there's an unmapped floodplain. Is that correct?
Yeah, where I'm going is let's get down to what can be developed and what can't. You know, what has a higher likelihood of potential development instead of talking about the whole city all the time.
If I could continue, do we need to take an action on the joint meeting with the board, with the planning commission and the council? Is that something?
Let's get something back.
Okay.
If we're digging into GIS, is it possible to put a layer in to show development that's vacant on a fluid level so that if the Fort Franklin EDC website wanted to have that available, a person looking for vacancies would see the natural features that they have to be aware of, but also the little bonus areas where there's a vacancy, there's pick and save is for sale, that sort of thing.
I'm not aware of any such layer. I would assume you could create one using assessor's information. I would assume that would be pretty labor intensive.
We have a layer of all subdivisions. We could put all the subdivisions that on because we have a layer for that.
Something less abstract.
But it should be vacant, though, I think.
Well, there's a vacant lot here and there. I mean, that's something that we probably could do that in subdivisions. We probably could, Todd probably could go through and make a map showing in the subdivisions where the vacant lots. That was really helpful.
We still have a motion on the floor. Can we approve
it?
Okay, that's right. So it's got six. So there's a motion to go home.
Game's over, so you can go home and watch
that. All right. Packers are up 14 and
nothing.
Got some living legends on both sides.
You tell me.
All right, let's get off of this. You understand, right? City of Franklin, Complete Streets Connectivity Committee.
Still waiting on the grants.
Oh, I'll update. New appointments were made partially. We still have some appointments that have to be made. And we're going to schedule joint meetings with, at the very least, Public Works and Parks.
There were some, I got this list from the Connectivity Committee, whoever sent it to me, and they had one of the things that Alderman Wilhelm advised her. Are you looking to have her appointed?
Yes.
Oh, well, because they...
Every grant
when
we write,
they broke up the list...
She's labor intensive.
It had, you know, committee members,
yeah,
advisors, parliamentarians, so somebody should have just said, these are the folks we need to have appointed.
And I'm assuming the Trails Committee will be gone away.
It is gone.
It's gone. So we have a meeting schedule. We'll have to take that off the calendar.
Well, sometimes they mislabel the name. It's Complete Streets and Connectivity. And we put together the committee based on the template we were given, and the committee, they all have roles. So one of the roles is advisor, and there's a citizen voting member. So they're all committee members, but they have roles within them.
That's not the way it was given. Otherwise,
we can fix it.
Yeah, and I'm looking for suggestions of what is the three remaining members.
I think we have everything. Our suggested members are all filled. There were the two that I sent you. We need to get their application all put in so that they have to have the background check and everything. One was had the medical background. One was with the elderly walking club.
When you say you sent it to me, I get like as much, and so it goes directly out.
Oh, you forwarded it and said, let's get these two processed. Okay. And part of the process is they have to fill out that form so they can have their background check.
Okay.
Yep. Just further clarification and maybe a nudge, one of the things we've run into is that the bylaws as established calls for exactly these positions. There must be a parliamentarian. There's 11 members that are to be appointed, and only 7 of them are voting. And all of that was supposed to be done at our first meeting. So absent a full committee, we're at a loss to be able to vote and have a quorum to pick a chairman to move that forward. So I would encourage you to have all 11 positions filled.
Okay, and I would have filled as many as I could have, had I known that they all needed to go forward. When people made their internal assignments, when they put assignments or classification,
we were trying to look at that in just clarification because of the voting members, none of them, they're all citizen members, not elected, and that's why the aldermen that have been working with us on the Trails Committee need to go into someplace else. So we need a body of 7 citizen members voting, and that's why they have all of either into parliamentarian or advisor positions.
But all of them are voting members?
No. Only 7, and none of them are elected officials. Remember, bylaws correctly.
And I thought I come to 5, 4.
Yes. I think because you looked at the 5.
7, you should have a quorum.
Technically, one of them you appointed was Alderman Solomon, and he cannot be a voting member because he is not a citizen member. He's an elected official. Okay. And that's why he was pigeonholed into the parliamentarian, and that's why Alderman Wilhelm and as an advisor, because those do not require citizen members.
It was a long meeting.
Set the structure up, but
we put that together.
7 citizen members that are the only ones voting, and we need a quorum of those in order to pick a chairman.
Well, thanks. Okay.
Move to adjourn.
All right, there's a motion to adjourn. Is there a second?
Second.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify.
I'm still
waiting. Aye. Opposed, I say.